Quantifying Trust by John Chu, narrated by Catherine Ho.
The algorithms Maya wants can't exist yet. Nothing is powerful enough to run them fast enough to be useful. Her doctoral work is requiring more hardware design than she expected. It's not enough for her just to propose something on paper. She wants to see whether her algorithms work. This is why Maya is sitting in her lab, waving her arms and wriggling her fingers. With her VR goggles on, she doesn't see a half dozen somewhat rusted metal desks with missing handles sitting on a raised floor and pushed to the walls of the lab, the dented, mostly empty bookshelves, or the massive, antiquated air conditioning unit that takes up an entire wall by itself. Instead, what surrounds her are layers and layers of thin tubing connecting logical functions and memories into a network. The former are slides that split off and connect to tubing in all directions. The latter are shimmering dots arranged in matrices. Glowing dots of all colors speed through the tubing, swoosh through the logical functions, then out the other side. She gestures, and a logical function envelops her. Stack of 3D surface graphs glide around her. They have the spectrum for axes. Dots stream down the axes, turn a right angle when the colors match. Some rebound away, changing color as they do. Others disappear. When she sweeps her arm from left to right, one of the surfaces wriggles. Its shape changes to match the arc she's drawn. The pattern and colors of the dots that leave change in turn. This is visual programming meets hardware prototyping. It's like reaching inside somebody and doing surgery on their guts. Maya zooms back out. She prods the network, and logical functions just barely in sight blink red in error. She frowns. Analog circuit design is so much trickier than digital design, and the hardware has evolved in response to the training stimulus. She pulls off her goggles to consult her notes. It takes her a few tries to decipher her own handwriting. Goggles back on. She makes a few deft gestures with her fingers, and her design stops blinking. Having wiped out the changes from her previous attempt at training Sammy from social media, she restarts the training, forcing the machine she's prototyping to decide what to trust. The subject of her surgery sits on the desk in front of her. Enclosures for artificial intelligences seem to come in only two flavors. They are either childlike cartoons with eyes too big for their already too big heads, or lithe women firmly in the uncanny valley. At 1 foot tall, with a head that takes up a third of its body, Sammy is decidedly the former. If Maya ever has final say on a design, her AI wouldn't fall into either category. It'd be an interesting change if, for once, the AI presented like a broad-shouldered, muscle-bound man, firmly in the uncanny valley, for example. It'd be a funny in-joke, if nothing else. The door into the lab clicks, then opens. Jake walks in. He's the postdoc Maya's advisor hired 2 weeks ago. He speaks English in a generically international accent that's impossible to place, and he looks like he could plausibly have been born anywhere in the world. Maya hasn't bothered to pry. If role-playing games were something she still had time to play, she'd say Jake is built on too many points. A couple conversations in, she's only nominally convinced of his humanity, and then only because all the other possibilities are impossible. She may have said this to his face this last week. If nothing else, her face flushing red right after showed that she was human. Figure skating. Maya doesn't bother to say hello. Oh, I train up to a quad lutz, he said, his left hand gripping an empty mug. Maya's gaze narrows. You're kidding. No, I'm completely serious, he rolls his eyes. Do I look like I'm capable of getting off the ice and spinning around 4 times before landing on a ridiculously thin blade of metal? Jake is tall, but not absurdly so. He only presents that way. The big shoulders, wide back that juts out from his t-shirt, and bulging arms are ostentatious signifiers of size and power. Add to that a trim waist due to the apparent lack of any body fat, thighs a little too big for his jeans, and suspiciously perfect bilateral symmetry, and you have someone who should need a passport to enter planet Earth. but not someone whose shape is easily stable when jumping or whose shape lets him spin quickly enough in the air. The figure skaters doing the most difficult jumps right now are all male and built like short sticks. So not figure skating? Maya will sear the date in her brain if she's finally come up with something that Jake hasn't somehow perfected.
Well, I worked with some skaters on their jump biomechanics one summer. I helped someone get their quad lutz. That's close, right?
His gaze shifts past Maya to the AI. His face glows.
Sibling.
Excuse me? Generally, the initial reaction is, oh, how cute, or something, when people first see Sammy. The AI hits all the signifiers for adorability. This is the first time Maya has seen anyone claim it as family.
That's Sammy.
Jake points to it, his finger stabbing repeatedly like a sewing machine needle.
You prototype your artificial neuron design on it so that you can test out your novel trust quantification algorithms.
Wait, she holds up a hand. How do you know this? The artificial neuron paper is still under review. I haven't even talked to my advisor about those algorithms yet. Jake's eyes grow wide, and his mouth forms a small O. For a moment, he is as adorable as Sammy. This should not be humanly possible.
OCR errors on the dates when her notes were scanned for archiving, maybe.
The words are soft, more to himself than to Maya. His eyebrows shoot up when he realizes she heard him. He raises his voice back to normal.
What sort of software requires this sort of hardware?
Maya is like any grad student still interested in their dissertation topic. Ask her about her research and all else is forgotten. She launches into a technically dense and wildly discursive explanation. Jake nods encouragingly, and by the time she's done, she's talked about correlating mind data, self-adaptive filters, evolutionary training algorithms, but also the musicals of Harold Arlen, the films of Akira Kurosawa, and why Kim Yona was robbed of an Olympic gold medal in 2014.
You're attempting to filter sexism, racism, heterocentrism, and the other systemic prejudices out of AI training through the power of higher mathematics?
Jake looks puzzled for a moment before his jaw drops and his mouth forms another O, this one larger than the last time.
This is generally not what computer scientists mean by race-free.
That joke really does not land. Maya side-eyes him. You still haven't told me how you know about Sammy. Jake holds his hands up in mock surrender. He clutches his heart as he stumbles back a step as if he's been shot. That and his frown strikes Maya as a bit much. The man has facial expressions like a Disney cartoon.
You got me. I'm an android sent back from the future. Right now, I'm helping organize the March for Truth. Figures that I can't fool my eventual creator.
He drops his hands and grins. The change in affect is instant and infectious.
It's also not an unreasonable guess based on what you have published.
You probably also guess the murderer on the first page of mystery novels. Fine, don't tell me. Just keep my work under your hat for now. She swivels her chair back towards Sammy. Might as well show you what I'm up to.
Oh, I'd love that.
Jake rubs his hands. She flicks a switch at the back of Sammy's neck. Its head lifts. The lenses in its eyes pull back and forth as they focus. Maya says hello to it, and it replies with a sexist insult it learned from the internet. She shuts Sammy down so quickly she almost knocks it over. It's still relying on wrong sources of information. The trust quantification functions need work. She'll dig into Sammy to see what happened, wipe out the training, then try again. Maya swivels back around. The gaze of the man from the uncanny valley is very guilty puppy. He hunches down next to Maya's chair and just stares at Sammy. His hands grip the edge of the desk and his arms grow as they tense. Jake's not doing that nonchalant thing that she's seen other physically improbable men do. They give off an air of seeming unawareness that they are way taller or way more muscular or whatever. Jake seems to revel in his size and shape. That said, Android from the future should never be anyone's go-to explanation for anything. I create you one day, huh? Maya levels a particularly disbelieving glare. Sammy may be Maya's best evidence that, despite her doubts, Jake is probably human. She's ruled out first contact with a strange visitor from another planet on the grounds that no alien species would just happen to look so human. Mostly, she doesn't see how anyone gets to Jake from Sammy. Jake just shrugs. As an undergrad, Maya worked nights as a cashier at a convenience food market. It paid just well enough, which is to say terribly, but her shifts were never all that busy. Once in a while, some old lady might come in asking for Worcestershire sauce, or some teenage boy would want to know where the condoms were. Otherwise, she'd sit on her stool and do homework. For the record, it took her a few seconds to recognize the lady meant Worcestershire, and no time at all to tell the teenage boy the store didn't sell condoms. She might have asked the other employee working that night, though, at the top of her voice. The clear plastic canister next to the cash register was always filled with lollipops, wrapped in red, green, and brown waxed paper. One day, someone walked up to the cash register and stared at the canister for a few seconds before she shifted her gaze to Maya. "Hi, my daughter would like some lollipops. She wants only the brown ones, and I'm colorblind." The woman continued on before Maya had a chance to offer to pick them out for her. "So I'm going to sort out the brown lollipops, and you tell me whether I'm right or wrong, okay?" Maya nodded. The woman reached in the canister, then took out a handful. One by one, she showed each to Maya, then dropped them to her left or right, depending on what color Maya said they were. After a few lollipops, the woman started naming the color, and Maya corrected her once or twice. Finally, she sorted on her own, and a pile of brown lollipops lay on her left, and the rest lay on her right. She paid for the brown ones. Maya bagged them while the woman dumped the rest back into the canister. Maya understood in principle how AIs were trained, even as an undergrad. It wasn't that different from how this woman trained herself to recognize those brown lollipops. In practice, the woman had to trust Maya. She could have been an asshole, and the woman would have given her daughter a bag of red lollipops, or worse, there could have been no feedback at all. The server who didn't bother putting Maya's gluten-free pasta order as gluten-free might wrongly learn that it didn't matter, since he wasn't the one who got sick. None of this sank into Maya until grad school. Swear words and slurs fill Sammy's responses to Maya's questions. This is not what she wants. If it were, all she'd need to do is leave the lab. Strangers, "But you speak English so well," her. Kids spontaneously pull their eyes into slits and start ching-chonging at her as she walks to and from the university. Where do kids even pick up those stereotypes these days? When she is Sammy's trust quantification function, its responses are adequate. Nothing anyone would confuse for intelligent, but usable. But then Sammy just reflects her biases. Let Sammy roam free by itself on the internet, and it's clear that even if Maya understands what data sources to trust, she's failed to compose the set of logic functions that can make Sammy understand, or can even be evolved to make Sammy understand. Maybe she'd be better off defining trustworthiness and let Sammy evolve the trust quantification functions from that. She taps the back of Sammy's neck to shut it down. Wiping out Sammy's training again can happen later. She sets her forehead on her desk, so she's staring down at the floor. This is oddly comforting. Jake walks in. From her angle, Maya can make out the calves stretching against his rolled-up jeans and the low-cut sneakers that have to be too small for his feet. Or maybe they just look too small in relation to his legs. He's still carrying the same empty mug. A hairline crack now runs down the side. Temporal mechanics. She's now resorting to a topic that's not a thing.
"Well, I'm here, right?" he laughs. "Seriously? The foundational research is just getting started. But no one doing it will recognize that time travel is even a ramification for a few more years. Would you like some citations?"
His tone is so matter-of-fact that for a moment, Maya can believe that Mr. Uncanny Valley actually does come from the future and has the citations at the ready. Or maybe his CV also includes years in acting school. At this point, she can believe either. Wouldn't that cause some sort of temporal paradox or something?
Yes.
The sarcastic tone is pitch perfect. It plays against his word, but Maya doesn't feel mocked.
In fact, I've already said too much. The universe has imploded, and you have been trapped in a time loop, reliving the same 2 minutes for the past 45 years, 7 months, 23 days, 4 hours, 56 minutes, and 12 seconds.
That doesn't sound encouraging. It would explain the progress I'm not making on Sammy, though.
Tell me about it. All I get to do is walk through that door and explain to you that we're in a time loop over and over again.
She laughs as she sits back up. Her jaw drops when she sees the rest of Jake. Dark brown stains are streaked across his light blue t-shirt. Some of the blood still looks wet. Wow, what happened?
What?
He follows her gaze to his t-shirt.
Oh, this. Nosebleed. Sensitive nasal membranes. Snorted too much cocaine at Studio 54 in the 1980s.
Her gaze narrows. Jake does not look like he's old enough to be alive in the 1980s, much less old enough to be in a nightclub back then. For a brief moment, Maya thinks about ways to make him bleed. It'd be definitive, but it'd also be no fun. Not to mention wrong. Besides, she'd rather keep playing the game where he's wedged himself in the uncanny valley and she tries to pull him out. You don't lie, do you? She pulls a notebook out of her desk. You just say something obviously implausible instead.
Oh, that's just when I'm around you.
He shrugs, looking a little deflated.
Would you lie to your mother?
I'm not your mother.
Of course not.
He looks a little puzzled.
It's a metaphor.
What's a metaphor?
An implied comparison without using like or as.
Laughter erupts from her. Jake is just standing there watching Maya fall out of her chair. His, who me, did I say something funny? Body language is both subtle and over the top. It's as though he genuinely doesn't understand what's so funny. He's quite the actor, she decides. Jake offers Maya a hand. She refuses, and Jake goes to his desk. She pushes herself back onto her chair, then flips through her notebook for a while before she shuts it. Jake, how do you know who to trust? He turns to look at her. She thinks she can see his reaction happen in rapid, discreet steps. His brow furrows. His lips purse. His mouth opens, then closes again. His actions get the message across, but the effect feels more studied than organic. Finally, he shrugs.
How does anyone know?
After 15 minutes, if any undergrad still didn't get the memo that the theme of the first digital systems lecture of the semester was feedback, they weren't paying attention as far as Maya was concerned. She sat off to the side in the front row of the gigantic lecture hall, her fist propping up her chin. She'd twigged onto the theme after about 3 minutes. Professor Schmidt always insisted whichever teaching assistant assigned to her for the semester attend all her lectures. Otherwise, she'd be doing literally anything else. She was still a first-year grad student then, and lucky not to be assigned to a course with a lab component. Professor Schmidt was talking about feedback in the mathematical sense. Some version of the output of a function also became an input to the same function. 20 minutes in, schematic diagrams of storage elements for sequential logic filled the chalkboard. She had this thing about showing how a storage element a modern digital designer might actually use was derived from the simplest possible storage element. Even as the circuits grew more complicated, at their heart were cross-coupled logic elements. The output of each logic element was also fed back into the input of the other. The cross-coupling kept one output stable at the stored state and the other output at its opposite. In order to remember something, you had to keep reminding yourself to keep regenerating the memory. Digital logic is built on the clean, shiny lie that there are only two possible states on and off. The real world is analog. The number of states, if that's even a meaningful concept, between on and off is infinite. When Professor Schmidt drew transfer curves to characterize the relationship between input and output for the circuits, Maya perked up, and other students' eyes began to glaze. No one expected Professor Schmidt to analyze analog circuits in a digital systems class. Most of the students were probably there because they didn't like analog circuit analysis in the first place. 30 minutes in, Maya decided that feedback was building to a larger point, the ultimate instability of the building blocks of digital logic. Idealized digital circuits pretended transistors were simple switches that were either open or closed. Real life was much more complicated in ways that Professor Schmidt had no qualms racing through. After all, everyone in the room had passed transistor theory, and while transistors could behave like switches, they could also behave like amplifiers. Professor Schmidt gleefully listed the ways a simple storage element could fail to store the right value. Most of them were some variant of things take time. Any switch, as it opened or closed, was neither opened nor closed. What happened in the meantime, though, was also fed back. The value stored could be neither on nor off for a good long time. The class met for 50 minutes a day on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. 45 minutes in, Maya finally leaped to Professor Schmidt's actual point. The job of engineering was to create stable systems out of fundamentally unstable elements. No girder by itself was reliable, but a well-designed bridge could be. The course was called Digital Systems, but what took up the rest of the semester was building stable systems. The other lectures were about how to keep elements out of unreliable regions of operations, how to structure elements together to compensate for their relative weaknesses, and so on. They were, however, just expansions of this lecture. Years later, as a researcher in grad school, Maya lays her head down, staring at her desk in frustration. When she wonders whether building an AI that can trust correctly is even possible, what comes back to her is this lecture. The good news is that Sammy has stopped swearing at Maya. The bad news is that now Sammy won't talk to Maya at all. It stopped responding completely. It just stands on Maya's desk, failing to look angry. Its stubby arms are folded across its chest, and its mouth curves down into a frown. It can't do anything about its big eyes, but Maya can't look at them without imagining that at any moment they'll be filled with tears. The VR goggles have to go on. She flies into Sammy's hardware. Even at a distance, the interconnection of logical functions and memories isn't quite as she remembers, but it's not supposed to be. It's supposed to evolve as Sammy learns. The evolution is not supposed to render Sammy non-functional. Only dark, stray dots flow through the tubing. The door clicks, followed by silence. It has to be Jake. Anyone else would have made the tiles on the lab's somewhat loose, raised floor rattle and squeak. Sammy comes alive. Long streams of glowing dots rush through the layers of thin tube and slide through the functional units. Maya rips off her VR goggles to see Sammy pivot towards Jake, smile, wave, then swear at him. Sammy is not non-functional, just angry at her. This means Sammy can get angry, or something that Maya interprets as anger. Jake casually transfers a stack of boxes 5 high from one hand to the other so that he can close the door. Each arm bulges as it curls up the weight. The stack doesn't teeter as he goes to his desk, then sets it down. Maya steps over to his side. The boxes are full of books. She eyes him skeptically. No one can support that much weight with just their biceps. Well, perhaps someone who has taken literally all the steroids. From certain angles, his arms do look about as wide as his head. Hey, you're the one who told me you didn't think I was human. Maybe you're right. Jake shrugs. Aside from some outrageous things that you weren't supposed to believe and you don't, I have been completely honest with you. It's not my fault that the truth is unbelievable, for now anyway. He unpacks his books onto the bookshelves.
They are an odd and intimidating lot, ranging from slim volumes on ethics and religion to thick tomes on quantum mechanics. If you are an android from the future, aren't you supposed to make some pretense of acting human?
And around you, the point of that would be what?
She finds herself thinking he has a point. Game or no game, his story is self-consistent. Regardless, it seems Sammy will talk to him when it won't talk to her. Jake, can you please talk to Sammy for me? Jake stops in mid-step and turns to Maya, a copy of La Guerre de Golf n'est pas au lieu in hand. It turns out two-handed, like a talisman against evil. No, I'm creating a pedestrian paradox that leads to my own creation. He looks down at the book, then lowers it to his side. Work out Sammy's problems yourself, for my sake, if no one else's. Jake continues to unpack. Maya trains the VR goggles on him and doesn't see anything. All that means is that he's not constructed out of prototyping hardware. She doesn't see anything when she looks at herself or the air conditioning unit through her VR goggles either. With the VR goggles trained on Sammy, slides and tubing fill her field of view. Occasionally, she can hear the hiss as Jake places a book on a bookshelf. That's the only sign that he is still in the lab. Either Jake does have that much casual dexterity, or he's working extremely hard to show off. She's tempted to throw her VR goggles or Sammy at him just to see what happens. She half expects he would catch either without even looking. However, if it turns out Android from the future has just been this game they've been playing with each other, replacing either is not in the budget. In VR, Maya flies inside Sammy. She glides along tubing, hovers over memories, and zooms into logical functions. How the machinery that drives Sammy has evolved becomes clear over the course of hours. Parts of it are so changed from what she remembers and so odd, she may never understand them. She realizes why Sammy has become non-responsive to her and, apparently, only her. Sammy knows. It's not stored in any of the memories, but assumed by all logical functions and baked into how they are interconnected. The knowledge that Maya has been resetting Sammy's training whenever she feels it's going wrong is innate in Sammy. It's ingrained into the hardware and predicates everything it does. Sammy doesn't trust Maya. The trust functions are working, just not in the way Maya expected. Maya can't remove its assumptions about her without modifying every logical function and rewiring the connections between them. That's clearly impractical. She can nuke Sammy completely, reload her original design, then reapply the improvements she's come up with since. The result would no longer be Sammy. That said, Sammy behaves like the kids who ching-chong at her as she walks to school. That makes nuking Sammy oddly tempting. It's not her kindest thought. I'm an idiot. She buries her head in her hands. Nonsense. You're one of the smartest humans I know. Maya jumps at Jake's voice. She pulls off her VR goggles. His boxes are now empty. The bookshelves are full. You've been so quiet. I forgot you were still here.
Yep, that's me.
He puts his hands on his waist.
Silent, efficient, deadly.
He smiles at the last. The smile disappears and his hands fall when she doesn't reciprocate. Every year, one of the professors here gives a lecture whose point, when she gets around to it, is that engineering is the art of making stable systems out of unstable devices.
Oh, Professor Schmidt.
His smile comes back and his eyes light, not literally, with recognition. I've mentioned this to you before?
Well, strictly speaking, not yet. It depends on who's before you mean, I guess.
He is utterly straight-faced. Maya can't tell whether he is serious or if cracking a smile would ruin the joke. Anyway, it's just hit me that it's unfair to expect Sammy to resist the stereotypes that humans fall for all the time. Jake opens his mouth, starts to speak, closes his mouth, then opens his mouth again. His actions are perfectly timed to convey indecision.
If anyone else had done exactly the same, Maya might just think they were being indecisive.
Down that road lies predestination paradox.
He taps the fingers of his left hand on his thigh.
I don't know what answering you will do to me.
Oh, I'm going to erase Sammy and bring it back up from scratch, no matter what you say. She puts the VR goggles back on and turns to Sammy. Having screwed up with Sammy, I need a fresh start. The trust mechanisms work. It's now a matter of the right feedback. Jake makes a noncommittal noise. Maya has stretched her hands out and is making fine gestures with her fingers. The prototyping system throws several, "Are you sure?" warnings at her. After she agrees to all of those, the tubing and functional units all disappear, then reemerge in the configuration she originally established. They are lined up in perfectly regular matrices on a perfectly flat plane. Each plane is stacked exactly on top of the next. It's all absurdly unnatural, but it's a new start. Maya takes off the VR goggles. There are changes that still need to be applied before Sammy reactivates, but those can happen without her watching. This time, it will subject itself to its own randomly generated statements until it can reliably generate trustworthy statements before she lets the internet loose on it. No bias from the human world to throw off its notions of trust. Jake, are you really here to organize the March for Truth?
Well, I'm here, and I'm helping with the March for Truth. I never explicitly stated a relationship between the two, but if you don't believe who I am, there's no point in getting into why I'm here. Sorry.
He shrugs.
If it helps, what I'm actually doing here has a shelf life. I don't expect to survive it much longer. Don't examine my remains. Predestination paradox and all that.
Maya's eyebrows rise. This is a bit dark for their game. I was just thinking that we deserve the AI we create. It'd be easier to filter out the racism and the rest if, systematically, there was less of it to begin with. She straightens up her desk, filing her papers, stashing her notebooks in desk drawers. Not everyone has to work towards a better world for the world to work, but it'd be better if everyone did.
I'm a machine intelligence, not a mind reader.
Oh, two things. One, is the March for Truth looking for volunteers? And two, you know. She blows air through her lips and looks down before she meets his gaze again. If I could close my eyes, but still sense your body language, and if we're just talking, not wandering in some obscure corner of knowledge no one but you has ever visited before, I can just about believe you're a person.
Are you implying that I don't pass the Turing test?
Jake looks indignant. His hands are on his waist. Actually, I'm saying that you do. Passing for human is overrated. You're a more convincing conscious intelligence than any number of people I know. His eyebrows rise. His jaw drops. The look of astonishment is elegant, precise, and utterly adorable. The effect is so affable that Maya has to remind herself that he's also the guy who thought nothing of wearing a shirt splattered with blood.
Thank you.
Jake masters himself. His face contracts to its normal length.
We're always looking for volunteers. Do you want to meet the group?
Sure. Jake nods. He heads out the door, and Maya follows. She turns out the light behind her, leaving Sammy alone to meditate on the quantification of trust.